In this episode, we will continue to learn about how bamboo can cultivate wealth and sustainability through business.
Bamboo Insights, valuable knowledge from amazing experts.
Hello, dear listeners. I'm your host, Ayaka. I'm truly grateful for the opportunity to learn alongside our listeners the world of bamboo. For today's talk, we will continue to have a conversation with Carol Kariuki, CEO of Greenpot Enterprises. In this conversation with Carol, we will explore her business model and ethos more in detail. And now, enjoy the show. I wanted to ask you the details about your business model. So could you please walk us through the key components of a Greenpot Enterprises business model and how it different from a traditional approaches to environmental restorations, and what kind of innovation distinguishes your practices from other bamboo-based business?
We took on a very holistic approach very early on. And the reason being that we were the first business that was getting into this space. So we started by we started with the end in mind, where we decided bamboo can make over thousands and thousands of products. Which products does Greenpot want to make? So we started by defining those products. And that was, you know, the wood products, all the way from toothpicks to skewers to cotton swabs to disposable cutlery, and that we call the sticks line. And then we wanted to work with the construction sector in just having wood-based products like, you know, wood flooring and particle board from the waste. So that was one set of products, and we call that the wood line. We then wanted to then look at the energy situation, which was very dire. So both for the domestic market, where they would look for charcoal that is more sustainable, greener, less odor, and, you know, that would really be healthy for the population. And also looking at factories as a big off-taker. So for instance, the tea sector in Kenya consumes over 1.5 million metric tons of wood mass for curing of tea. So if all that is coming from unsustainable sources, that was a problem. So we wanted to solve that problem. And we've also seen other factories that, you know, towards their net zero by the year 2050, coming to us and saying, look, can we find joint solutions? And also working with some of the universities to see how can we innovate to create products for this industrial sector. The third product we wanted to make was paper, because you see, paper is, you know, a huge consumer of biomass, and at the same time, so important in terms of having more sustainable sources of paper, all the way from straws to, you know, packaging material to things like tissue paper. And bamboo really fitted the bill because it was antibacterial. And the fourth product, which for me was the one that converted me to bamboo, was textile. How can we have this thing that has the tensile strength of steel, then being able to have such beautiful products, soft, you know, bed sheets or, you know, nice t-shirts and things like that. And so those are the four products that we zeroed in on. And from that, we then asked the big question, which bamboo variety would be able to be versatile enough to take care of these four product lines that we had identified? And we identified now the species that we wanted to use for that, you know, that could produce huge amounts of biomass also, you know, to give the returns to the farmers, and at the same time be able to meet the chemical and the requirements of the products that we wanted to make. So that then informed which species that we made. And then in terms of the growing of the bamboo, we had to be innovative because, you know, we didn't have a lot of capital ourselves. So we started what we call the gated community of forests. That's where we then, and we would buy large tracts of degraded land, subdivide that into 2 acres, 5 acres, or 10 acres of land that we could sell to individuals who wanted to do good and make some money. And the second way we did it was encouraging people with their own farms to plant bamboo for a return. So they would buy seedlings from us, and then Greenport would give them an offtake guarantee and also give them technical support during the growing period. The third thing that we did was also to get into large-scale restoration projects. So currently we've got interesting projects around the Mara River, which supports 45% of Kenya's wildlife. We also have a project that is working with the Kenya Electricity Generating Company that is going to restore 1,000 kilometers of riparian land using bamboo so that they can secure the water for generation of for the hydro dams in the future. Because currently with the poor agricultural practices upstream, they're not able to get sufficient water throughout the year. So these are really exciting projects that, you know, that also give us the biomass that we need in terms of the industrial ambition. So in a nutshell, we have the seedlings so that we ensure that we are clear which kind of bamboo are we growing. And because we have the industrial ambitions, we needed to make sure that we have a traceability. We needed to make sure that the quality of the bamboo seedlings that are coming to us for manufacturing are consistent. So we wanted to make sure that that was something within our control. Then we have the ways we grow the bamboo through the gated community, the community, and as well as the restoration projects, and then have the industrial side. We're not going to make everything, but out of the four products lines, we would then generate long-term sustainability for the business and protect the farmers from being exploited by people who would come in and say, look, I just going to buy your bamboo for anything. So that's why we actually chose to be players in the whole value chain.
Thank you so much. You've touched on already a lot, but again, if you could clarify a little bit more, like what strategies does Greenport employ to ensure fair and equitable compensation for small farmers participating in bamboo cultivation?
Yeah, that was very important to us from the beginning because, you know, some of us grew up in coffee areas and now today the farmer gets less than 2.5% of the total value of the bamboo, I mean, of the coffee value chain. And we felt that it was important for, especially as we start, for us to influence the sector by participating in it. So we wanted to ensure that the farmers would get a minimum return. And that was promised in an offtake guarantee that we did for the farmers. And secondly, we also needed to invest a lot in terms of, you know, just education of the farmers and also ensuring that we give them technical support so that then they get optimal returns from their plantations. So we have a whole technical team of foresters that goes around taking care of our farmers and taking them through the different stages of the bamboo as it grows so that then they optimize their returns. The other thing that we're also doing is ensuring that we employ the local community in our businesses and work with them in some of the value chains to ensure that they also are able to get more than just, you know, the return from raw materials. So we want them to also come in, assuming we are doing something for IKEA, can we then have the local women then adding some value, like the Maasai's do a lot of beautiful beadwork. Can they add value and Kenyanize, so to speak, some of the products lines that we take to the market? So that's our vision. So we have a project we call the 10,000 Women Project, and we want to work with the local women to help them get more economically empowered in this.
Thank you. Now I want to move on to the impact, how you measure the impact. So in what ways do you measure the success and impact of the business model, not only just financial impact, but also like beyond like social, cultural, like an impact to the community, and then maybe women also, as I mentioned?
That's a really good question. One of the things that we've learned through some of the engagements with some of the partners that we have, people, we did an Acumen and IKEA accelerator. And how does a business like ours measure its social impact? Because that's really critical. So that's a really good question. And we do measure the number of acres that are restored using our, you know, our model. So we do measure and actually do polygons of the areas where we've actually planted the bamboo, or the farmers have planted, and that, you know, serves us very well. And we also look at the number of women and youth who are involved in our business. So that's critical. Now, unfortunately, in Africa, most of the land belongs to the men, but the work is done by the women. So there's always that, you know, fine line in terms of how do you really involve the women and the youth in the business. So what we've chosen to do in many of the jobs that we do, whether it's in our nurseries or in harvesting, is getting the women and the youth involved, and also just encouraging the men to also have models where they also save part of the income that they get from our business. We also measure the carbon sequestration based on the bamboo itself, and also the amount of biomass which is going to be produced per acre. So those are some of the things that we feel that are critical, because the amount of biomass required by a country like ours that's a developing country is quite huge. So if we can have this biomass from sustainable and traceable sources, then it means we can really do, it's possible for us to measure the impact that we have on the ground over and above just the financial gains. In one of our projects, like the one where we are restoring the Mara River in, you know, one of the critical rivers, there's a monthly measurement of the quality and the quantity of the water in the river. So it's very specific in terms of, if that's one of your goals, then what are you achieving over time? So that will be very interesting to see over the next 10, 20 years, how much impact this will have cost for some of the degraded landscapes we have today.
Thank you. That's really insightful. Now, could you please discuss any partnership or collaborations that have been very integral to implementing your business then?
We've had amazing partnerships. The first one being the International Network for Bamboo and Rattan, INBA, who have held our hands from the beginning. So they have what they call a Dutch SINO program. So they've been working with us towards the commercialization of bamboo in Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia. So we've been big beneficiaries of this program. They've given us a lot of technical support. They've given us some financial support. But more importantly, it's the people we go to. If we want to do a tour in China, they would then hold our hands. If we were looking for equipment, they would also hold our hand in terms of getting the right partners for the journey that we are walking. So that has been a very good partnership for us. Then the World Resource Institute was also one of our biggest finds, because when we didn't even know we were doing restoration business. Initially, we just thought we were doing a business that made financial sense. But when we came across the World Resource Institute, they told us, what you guys are doing, you're participating in the restoration economy, which is a $1 trillion industry. And that was really insightful. The other partner that, and of course now later on, they've come through for us in terms of funding, in terms of even linkages with other like-minded organizations that could support our businesses in areas where they couldn't support us directly. Another partner that we worked with from the beginning is the Kenya Forestry Research Institute, that has done a lot of research over the last 40 years on bamboo. And they've really held our hands in terms of, you know, just ensuring that the bamboo that we are bringing into this market is the right variety, site species matching, and also in terms of the focal point for the Dutch SINO program that we talked about with INBA. We also have learned a lot from the Kenya Forest Service, and also in the areas that we've chosen to be, there was an interesting study that was done by the Clinton Foundation, the World Resource Institute, and also the Kenya Forest Service. And that mapped out in terms of where can bamboo grow? I mean, actually, where can we grow forests? What areas need to be restored? And which areas are suitable for which kind of forest? So that actually is what we used and informed our choice of places to focus on in the bamboo journey. So we've really found amazing, amazing partners on this journey. We did the IKEA and Acumen Accelerator, and that was almost very deliberate on our part, because we see people like IKEA, who are very keen to go green and to support social enterprises, as one of our focuses areas in terms of our journey to internationalize our products. So that's one of the partners that we want to look at in the next phase of our business.
Thank you so much. Now, towards the end of the podcast, I wanted to ask, what advice would you give to new entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, organizations looking to adopt maybe the similar kind of project, especially working with the bamboo? What advice would you give it to them?
I would say you need to be very resilient. It's been a long journey. It's been a journey where I call it blood, sweat, and tears. We are the women in the arena. Ours is a women-led organization, and it's taken so much from us, so much more than we ever thought. You have to have staying power. You must face a lot of rejection positively. But at the end, if you're focused on your goal and you're able to follow through and gain the confidence and the trust of the people that you meet along the way, you will be successful. The other thing is, cash is king. The thing about a restoration business is a very long-term business. So you must be willing and able to fund your business. The runway must be quite long. So when we started, we didn't have a very long runway, firstly, because we didn't have the money, and secondly, because all the research that we had pointed towards a much shorter time frame for commercializing the bamboo. So I think you really need to take that into account, be honest in terms of how much you need, and add even more so that then you're not struggling in terms of the financial cash flows. And then I think just keep knocking on doors. I say we've kissed so many frogs, we've talked to so many people. And I'd say that eventually the right people come along, your prince will come. So don't give up and just stay consistent, stay true, and believe in your dream.
I really love your last word, to be resilient, and also that I think you were mentioning about patience. And then I thought that is a very, in the beginning, I thought it's a very important for for us to have that such a as a spirit, and then so that everything will be possible probably.
Today we had a strategy meeting in the morning because we are now looking about starting the factory, and we are talking to our branding people and just what does our brand look like and everything. And one of the phrases that came through I thought was very critical, and it was starting small in a big way. That the irony of that, it's because for us right now, we are starting small, but our vision is big. So we can't start small in a small way because we think big. We want to do a lot for the country and for Africa. And yet, because our resources are small, we have to do the proof of concept. We have to go one step at a time, and that is okay. So I just thought that was something nice to share. Start small in a
That's a beautiful word. That is something I also have to keep in mind. That's all for the conversation. I'm certain that you understand much better now strategy for fair and equitable bamboo business, integration of community engagement and empowerment into the business model, the ways in which impact measuring works in a bamboo business. If you are vibing with what Carol shared, here's what you can do next. Learn more about her business, Greenpot Enterprises, through LinkedIn. Connect to Carol on LinkedIn as well. Discuss the various aspects of this episode with other listeners in our Facebook group page. I'm really looking forward to connecting with you again. Last but not least, make sure to join the next Empowerment Bamboo Workshop on March the 2nd with Carol, and of course, tune in next Monday. See you!
Thank you.